G-18, Central Plaza, New Birchwood, New Kerguelen. From afar, and more specifically, the lookout tower in the architect's outpost from which Dan McCarthy and Billy Kendrick had first viewed it, the city of New Birchwood had struck both men as remarkable in its uniqueness, if lacking any classic hallmarks of the futuristic science fiction cities that each had read so much about in their youths. The city's layout was arranged in the form of concentric circles, with a large green space in its center, surrounded by increasingly thick rings of buildings. It was this green area into which Dan and Billy had now been teleported, along with Tara Ford, and up close they could see far more detail on the surrounding buildings. Their surfaces appeared to be composed of a perfectly smooth and shiny rock, rather than metal or glass. But Dan briefly considered that these inner buildings would likely be the oldest of all, and that the rings progressively further from the center could well contain buildings constructed later, when the messenger's ancestors had developed newer and more visually striking materials. These thoughts were in Dan's head for only a moment, for between his group and the buildings stood a horde of alien beings who looked decidedly impatient with the gate above their heads, one Dan couldn't see with his own eyes, and one he wasn't sure if any of them could see either. But they knew it was there, and that was what mattered. The pressing need to calm tensions over what to do about the gate itself, and even more urgently, to prevent an escalation in the anger which understandably swirled around the killing of three young X-Squadron trainees, was at the forefront of Dan's focus. If things went well, and his group succeeded in ensuring peace on New Kerguelen and continued access between Earth and this remarkable alien planet via the other gate that linked them, Dan knew that humanity would have the rest of forever to further explore the city of New Birchwood. And if things didn't go well, none of it would matter.
"Everyone here will understand as much as you want them to," Sacco said. "The technology has been widely distributed since we discovered the outpost. Feel free to speak aloud if it focuses your mind, as I know it often does. Everyone also knows of the architect's suspicion towards humanity, and that being the core reason for the deception they cast upon us. Some are bitter, as I was at first, but I have placed protective force fields between yourselves and the crowd. In your own time, please begin."
Dan inhaled slowly and purposefully, looking for a gentle expression to focus on in the crowd and struggling to find one.
"Game face, Dan McCarthy," Tara whispered under her breath. "We didn't come here to lose."
In another context, Dan might well have felt like a Greek or Roman poet of old as he stood on a raised plinth in an open plaza and prepared to address a crowd that stretched back as far as the eye could see. The messengers had once mentioned a total population figure in the range of 40,000, one low enough to greatly surprise Dan at the time. And today, he really felt as though the vast majority of them must have been standing before him. The crowd went on and on, extending beyond the square area of grass-like foliage to press right up against the innermost ring of buildings. It was a new kind of humbling, and all Dan could do to ease his runaway heartbeat was try to pretend he was addressing a crowd of local friends and primarily supportive reporters at the Birchwood Drive-In.
"I'm here to tell you there is nothing to fear from the gate that has been discovered," he began, projecting his voice like never before. The drive-in had a speaker system. New Birchwood didn't. The scale of the crowd before Dan and the open-air nature of this location made this feel like a natural thing to do, but if his mind had been clearer, it would have gone without saying that none of the attendant aliens were hearing his words in a regular audio-based manner.
"The gate casts an ominous shadow," he went on, still practically shouting, "and I can't deny that. But it does not pose any genuine threat. Friends, we all know that the architects who deceived your kind for so long created that gate. But think about what that means. They have the power to create gates. If they were still around and still so inclined, the destruction of one gate would do nothing but prompt them to create another."
Billy nodded at Dan's side. There was more than a small amount of logic in the point, and he had delivered it well.
The architects are, or were, a powerful race, Dan continued, his voice fading more through his voice's inexperience in being so loud than any realization he didn't have to be heard as such by those near the back of the crowd. To return, they would not need that gate. We know the reason for the deceit you faced, or at least the reason suggested by what we found in the outpost. They wanted you to act as guardians against our potentially dangerous expansion. So this gate, if it does lead to their world, was surely designed for you to navigate, perhaps in an emergency, or perhaps if the architects one day wished to invite a crew of your kind to visit their world. Billy didn't nod this time, and Dan couldn't have seen Terra without turning to the side. The expressions of the countless aliens before him hadn't changed much either, so he continued with what he thought was the crux of his argument. After all, the gateway between Earth and New Kerguelen was very clearly created for your sole use. That much is evident, but the architects granted some of your kind the uplift power of teleportation, as well as creating these gateways, so we also know that they have mastered travel in a manner we can't yet scientifically conceive. There is no reason whatsoever to think they would need a gate to reach Earth or New Kerguelen from their own world if they are still there, and if they should ever want to. The gates, my friends, are for you. This gateway, even if it leads to the architects, brings no danger upon New Kerguelen.
Then let's destroy it, someone yelled. We can do it.
Prior to this, Dan hadn't heard any telepathic hubbub or voices, only the inevitable shuffling sounds that came from so many bodies being packed so tightly in a crowd. When he turned in the direction he somehow knew the call had originated from, though, he saw the group of six blue-shirted squadron leaders from the council office.
Do it. Remove any doubt,
one of the heckler's colleagues added in agreement. Dan looked at Sacco, who implored him to continue.
I've already tried, the alien weakly insisted.
Unsure how to proceed, Dan thought about trying to re-explain his earlier point about the fruitlessness of destroying the gate. He felt like it was a good one, which should have gotten through, but it clearly hadn't.
Destroying the gate could be dangerous in itself,
he replied as calmly as he could, changing tack. It would be a pointless risk, given that they could make a new one like I just told you, and it could potentially be a grave one. I'm not scared of the architects, but we don't know anything about how that gate works. In an astrophysical sense, attacking it with the powers and weaponry at your disposal could maybe even create a vacuum or something like that. You could needlessly destroy your whole world by pointlessly destroying a harmless gate.
Blanker than ever faces met Dan's words. He reflected more than a little ruefully that his warning had gone well over their heads. There was a painful irony at play, in that a species capable of traversing space knew less than he did about physics. Such was their total reliance on technologies they had been given rather than organically discovered or developed of their own accord.
We should destroy both gates,
a third blue-shirted alien interjected. Although the squadron was no more as one of New Kerguelen's official castes, all of which were formerly defunct, little had changed for some of its former hierarchy. These individuals had clearly, if unofficially, retained their leadership roles within a grouping which had mainly stuck together while the other castes fell apart. The rigid structure and routines inherent to militaristic groups like this went some way to explaining it, Dan considered, but what bothered him was how prominent the squadron now was, given that the leaders of all those other castes had seemingly retreated to the fringes.
Nothing against the humans who have helped us when we needed them,
this third alien said to the crowd, surprising Dan with that statement.
But we need to remove any threat of the architects returning.
The odd sight of thousands of arms suddenly being raised into the air caught the humans off guard.
What are they doing?
Terra silently asked Sacco.
Something between applauding and cheering, he replied. They're showing approval for his proposal, and they're showing it very clearly.
Dan gulped, knowing very well the implications of any such course of action. Destroying the gateway between Earth and New Kerguelen, even if it didn't cause physical damage to either world, would cut off any and all contact between humanity and the messengers. With neither race capable of creating more gates in the way he had tried to convince his crowd the architects could, the door wouldn't just be closed, it would be locked and bolted. Those bolts, Dan reflected, would in turn doom his daughter Piper to a life stricken by whatever precise uplift or alien-related ailment her mind still held within it. Having spent the past 5 minutes downplaying threats, Dan McCarthy was stunned by how quickly such a real and immediate threat had arisen. Painfully considering the implications for Piper, he couldn't even speak.